Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, it's going to be, I think, a fascinating show. We have a lot of things to talk about. We're going to break some new ground, as always. We're certainly going to break some new ground today because there's a lot that is happening that it's underground for now. It's in pieces. It's like tech history. And so I'm just going to kind of wing my way through this because I don't really have a clear, today. Feel free to join me because it's me there. And I have Dr. Peter Pride joining us in half an hour. I got the half hour with you. Shannon Rice can't be here today. She'll be back next week. And so we have an extra half hour to talk. And so the title of the show today is the path for Trump to push out Biden is broad regime. And it is sort of, you know, I think there's a sense that, you know, why are we going through this? It's these people, you know, it's a, well, he's there. We can't get rid of him, you know, and I'm thinking, well, of course you can. And so, you know, part of, if anything is going to happen, the first thing is you have to believe that it's going to happen. Blip on the radar that this disgusting stuff has to be fixed. Otherwise, otherwise, all the fraud that happened to us is just fine, and that'll become the new normal. That'll become business as usual. That'll be the standard. The standard is who will cheat better than the other side, and that's no way for a country to behave. I think a lot of countries operate that way. I don't want to be one of them. And so, fortunately, we still have a constitution, and we still have a lot of things going for us. The powers that be, big tech, the corporations, the idiots like Coke and Delta that are in Georgia right now that have no idea. I mean, no idea about the Georgia law and what it does to actually fix, you know, the election so that they won't be as full of fraud as they were before. They have no clue. Okay. So they're just knee-jerk reactions. It's like when Jesse Jackson used to run around to corporations with his Operation Push and the Rainbow Coalition. And he'll say, if you pay us a whole bunch of money, we won't call you racist. Okay. And of course, now that term doesn't have as much impact, so he can't do that. And I think he's getting older and slowing down anyway, which is a good thing because he kind of hijacked what was Martin Luther King's, you know, best statement ever, that we judge not on the content of not on the color of your skin, but the content of your character. And the mere fact, what's interesting about Martin Luther King is that he said, we judge. Okay. You know, and the whole woke generation, don't judge me. You can't judge me. Of course we can. In fact, everybody judges everybody else constantly. All right. But the criteria for which you judge, I mean, there's good judgment and bad judgment. If you're judging on prejudice and bigotry and skin color and identity politics and, you know, if you hate people that don't agree with you just because they don't agree with you, you've got a problem. Okay. You know, this is why I enjoy having my liberal trolls on my Facebook page. Because, first of all, they make no sense. Secondly, it's good to know what the other side's thinking or not thinking, as the case may be. So back to self-fulfilling prophecy. So people are, and I had questions on this on my Facebook page, and people were saying, well, how can this happen and what's going on? And, it's almost like you see, and I report on this too, in the election correction report on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time. And I talk about things that are going on in New Hampshire and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Georgia and Arizona. Arizona's the hotbed right now. Arizona's where the action is. All right. And then Mike Lindell, who's just doing, you know, God's work here to fix all this situation. He's got the money, he's got the power, he's got the media. He's in the position to do it. I'd like to have him on my show because where Action Radio is really going to come in is after, you know, the Biden regime is gone and you know, conservatives look around at each other and go, well, now what do we do? You know, that's the big problem with conservatives is they have no idea what to do with power. They don't. Democrats do. They've already got the agenda. They've got the agenda straight to utopianist hell. You know, or utopia hell. They know exactly where they want to take this country and down fast. They want to destroy it, you know, wreck it, you know, put us into the global, you know, world order, you know, teach us a lesson for daring to be independent, you know, purge the minds of all Americans of anything to do with freedom, you know, or a republic. I don't say democracy. Democracy is the way to sabotage a republic, by the way. right? So all this stuff is going on. And the big tech, the media, the globalists, the oppositions, the statists, the all those that want to take power away from you and hate the idea of individual freedom, they're winning right now. But here's the problem. We got them. We know what they did. We know the outcome. See the beauty of the story, the pathway for Trump to push out Biden and his fraud regime, we already know the outcome. There's no possible way out of this for them. They got caught. So they can censor all they want. As I said before in a tweet, actually it was a tweet. You know, I said, look, you know, we got him. Hang on, let me think about it. This is the problem with ADHD. You have like too many thoughts in your head ripping around like crazy. Trying to organize them is like trying to herd cats. You know, so although all those of you with ADHD, you know what I'm talking about. And this is why I say ADHD powers this show. So, in fact, I haven't played my cool thing for a while. It's here we go. This is what I think.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
Well, I was hoping that would give me a few seconds to think, but it didn't work. Anyway, so it'll come back to me. Everything does. It's just a question of when. So the beauty of what's happening is this is why I do the election correction report. We know the outcome. We got them. They screwed up. I think this is where I was going. Well, if not, it's still a good pathway to walk down. When I said for the last 2 years, and not just me, but strong conservative, independent. You know, I call myself an independent constitutionalist because I'm not really a conservative. I'm certainly not a Republican. But I said that if we're going to win in 2020, we have to outvote the vote fraud. And it wasn't just me saying that. A lot of folks are saying that too. And the nice thing is all you wonderful Trump voters did that. You outvoted the vote fraud by a whole lot. In fact, you outvoted the vote fraud by such a degree that they went crazy on election night. That's why everything was shut down. See, that's why we got them. Okay, we got them because you outvoted the vote fraud. They had to increase the vote fraud to outvote, to outmaneuver and out algorithm. I always wonder if that came from Al Gore, you know, because he invented the internet, right? You know, if an algorithm came from Al Gore. Apparently it didn't, but it's a nice thing to talk about, all right? So we outvoted the vote fraud, so they had to increase the vote fraud so much that they made mistakes, that it became obvious. And, there's such a trail. And now we have all this forensic stuff, and we have all this auditability, and we have, the analytical ability to look at the paper. And like one guy said, I can tell if the person handled it smoked or not. You know, that's how good things are these days. So we've got this wonderful technology. So the question how we use it, all right? And so, I know where it's going. Conservatives, all right, keep up, folks. I bounce around a lot. I've been accused of that. It's absolutely true. But conservatives, the only thing that's deplorable about conservatives is the complete deplorable lack of new ideas. You don't know where to go. It's like unless you're arguing against something the left is doing, there are very few positive replacements. Occasionally something comes up, health insurance, personal health, medical accounts, things like that. And those are all good ideas. But what I'm saying is when it comes to real change, conservatives are a reactive force because they're so used to being a reactive force, and they're also so used to losing. Right? So we're Action Radio, where you and me and all of our citizen legislators, where we really are going to come into play is after Trump gets his office back. By the way, we had to check Congress too, because there's a good chance most of those people are frauds as well. And in fact, we really need to go back to 2018 and reverse everything that the 2018 Congress did, including especially impeachment. Okay, because they had no legal authority to do anything. I'm guessing that the Democrats in the House had no legal authority to do what they did because the Democrats weren't in charge of the House, if you take the correct vote count. All right. So these are the places we need to go. So I want you to dare to think bravely. And when everybody calls you, all the names they're going to call you, and they certainly call me the names, I don't care. I just laugh. I mean, to me, it's funny. You know, they're calling me a murderer now on my page. You're calling for a murder. You're calling for a violent insurrection. You're calling for, I'm not calling for anything of the kind. They are. And that's the funny part about it. So this projection violence is going on. So the left is not only incredibly violent, they're incredibly projection violent. And so they want to attribute to conservatives all the things they want to do to conservatives. It's really quite fascinating. But getting back to the other point, the conservatives you know, and Republicans and, you know, independents and folks, you know, you need to start thinking about ideas. You need to start thinking about not what's possible. Start thinking about what's impossible, because you're having a tough time, you know, coming up with what you think of as possible is far too limited. And that's what's holding you back. All right. And so when we write legislation, I just wrote a bill, and it's not just me writing all the bills, by the way. It may seem that way because I talk about them a lot, but the latest bill to put product liability, full product liability, back onto the vaccine manufacturers, all right, is there, and it's ready to go. I mean, it would be as simple. This is how simple it is, right? It's as simple as a member of the House or Senate going, this is interesting. Like Senator Johnson, for example, one of my heroes, who was holding all kinds of hearings on early treatment for COVID. And he looks at this and goes, oh, that's a good bill. You know, let's put this in the Senate. You know, just the mere fact that they put it in the Senate would scare the hell out of Big Pharma, because all of a sudden, wait a minute, there's a bill here to give us our product liability back. No one's dared do that, you know. And so just the mere fact of putting it in there or having them talk about it in the news, and people go, huh, is that easy? But this two-page bill does that? Well, yeah, it does, okay. So go look on writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com, and you will find our bill to put the full vaccine liability, product liability, back on the vaccine manufacturer. And my contention always is, if your product is safe, you know, it's like if you got nothing to hide, don't worry about it. Of course, that's a false thing, because you have protections, because you have everything. It's not that you're hiding things from the state. It's that the state isn't always using due process to investigate, okay? So in the reality, hiding has nothing to do with your innocence. You know, the old saying, if you have nothing to hide, you know, has nothing to do with your innocence, and everything to do with the government using proper due process to investigate you. That's the problem. So that's a stupid question, you know, but when it comes to products, it's a little different story. All right. In other words, if they have nothing to hide, if their products are good, then, I mean, there still might be problems. There still might be, you know, frivolous lawsuits, but those should be dealt with as frivolous lawsuits. But if the product is basically safe, and nothing's perfect, right? But they're basically safe. They've done a good faith effort. They've done everything possible to manufacture a good vaccine to build people's immunity against COVID, for example. If they've done everything right, you know, according to the latest procedures, and they follow the regulations, they have nothing to fear from product liability lawsuits. You know, because it even takes into account mistakes. You know, mistakes are made. Problems happen. Tragedies happen. That's okay. You know, I mean, we can allow for that. Well, it's not okay, but I mean, we can allow for that and say, okay, yeah, you did the best you could. Something went wrong. You couldn't have foreseen it. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but we're not going to, you know, have you lose your company because of a crisis that was caused. Now, if they, you know, but let's say that it's not a good faith effort. Let's say that they've created a pandemic along with, you know, Dr. Fascist and the government. Let's say it was engineered in Wuhan, China, you know, using gain of function research, which is illegal in this country, you know, made so by the Obama administration. See, Obama did something right. You know, all the things he did wrong, he actually did that right. And so, you know, and so they bring this product back to us, messenger RNA. It's not a vaccine. It's a genetic, it's genetic therapy. It's you know, it does all kinds of things. I don't even think they know what it does. I'm not going to report exactly what it does because I'm not sure myself. Okay. But I know damn well I'm not going to get a shot of something I don't know what it is, and you shouldn't either. All right. So if it's not a good faith effort, if they are trying to scam you, which I believe they are, if there is a cabal between Big Pharma, the World Health Organization, health technocrats like Dr. Fascist and all the Dr. Fascists in all the other countries, China, you know, to manufacture cheap vaccines and throw them on the world. Oh, the Chinese vaccine, by the way, this is an article on my Facebook page. It doesn't come off so well. It looks pretty bad. Okay. So if now those folks should be subject to product liability lawsuits. Okay. And if nothing else, there'd be discovery. I need to investigate, you know, where all this stuff came from, what they did and what their real intentions are. So that's the beauty of a product liability lawsuit, is you get to find out, you know, how the product came about. Okay. And so, you know, it's a trade secret. We can't tell you. Oh, really? Yeah. These people are dying here and they're being injured. Yeah, you better tell us. Anyway, so it's interesting. So I'm digressing a little bit too far. But the point is, getting back to our pathway for Trump to push Biden out, it's there. You know, and again, so let's get back to the election. So the election was a total fraud. We know the election was a total fraud. Mike Lindell is reporting on his latest special scientific proof that Trump got 80 million votes to Biden's 66 million, and even Biden's 66 million is suspect. Okay. So Trump won by 14 million votes, all right, which is a whole lot bigger than George Bush's 586 vote win or whatever it was over Al Gore. Okay. That ended up in the Supreme Court. So we're going to talk about that too. All right. So that's where we stand now. So big tech, the Democrats, the left, stupid woke corporations like Coke and Delta, and a bunch of forces are conspiring to keep the information from you that Trump won 80 million votes to Biden 66 million. So he actually won the popular vote by 14 million, not counting all the states that he won in. So there's a lot of states, even conservative states, like I think it was New Hampshire went for illegally for Biden. You know, I mean, they're going to get corrected too. So there's a couple electoral college votes. All right, so let me go to Facebook in the last 15 minutes before Dr. Pry gets here. I'm basically setting up the second hour so that you can call and you can talk and you can see what's going on. But I did a series of Facebook tweets, and I'm going to sort of go backwards through them from last night and let you know what's happening. So this was, it was yesterday, about 22 hours ago, I wrote this. Scientific proof, Mike Lindell's new special proving Trump won 80 million to 66 million. It's on my Parler page, okay, at Greg Penglis. All right, so the good stuff I can't put on Facebook because they're just going to censor it. And I'm not going to risk a violation on my Facebook account. So I just put the title and say, you know, go see this on my Parler account because I can put it there. So I found something on Mike Lindell's special just to let you know. Where do we put it? Come on, guys, where'd it go? Oh, please, this is crazy. I had it right there. This is what drives me crazy. So someday I'll have the help where I can just bring these things out. No, that's not it. I had a beautiful summary of where this went. This is frustrating. This is very frustrating. I might have to skip it by. All right. Let me, see, I had it right there too. All right. Let me try and pull a window up here. Basically, it was a summary of what Mike Lindell was talking about. And I can do that, but if I can find in my history here really quickly of what they said. Here we go. I think I found it. All right. Is this my article? I know I posted it. Here we go. Mike Lindell debuts. That's absolute proof. I don't want absolute proof. I want scientific proof. I'm really embarrassed right now. This is terrible. Here we go. Mike Lindell TV releases scientific proof on new television special with world-renowned physicist. Okay, so this is what he covered. I want to let you know just how good this is. And this comes from Lindell TV, also from the website We Love Trump. And he says, on March 31st, Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow, released a one-hour television special entitled Scientific Proof. Internationally renowned physicist absolutely proved 2020 was biggest cybercrime in world history. Okay, not rigged, but biggest cybercrime in world history. The special broadcast features Dr. Douglas Frank, who holds a PhD in surface analytical chemistry for the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Frank is an internationally recognized scientist with over 50 scientific publications. In 1990, Dr. Frank discovered and invented a technique for creating three-dimensional images of molecules resting on surfaces. He is the science. You want to know what the science? This guy's the science, all right? So Dr. Frank spent countless hours since the 2020 election following the data of the election returns county by county across such states as Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Colorado, to name a few. Dr. Frank's scientific and mathematical investigation has revealed that there was absolutely massive cyber fraud in the 2020 election. Okay, this is why I say we got them. We know how they did it. These scientists know how they did it. You know, so the outcome is there's only one possible outcome here. And that's the removal of Biden as a fraud. Okay. Now the question is how and how we do this, because the left is going to go kicking and screaming. And so are the Republicans too, by the way, all those that sucked up to Biden and the Democrats, because, you know, they're just as guilty as accessories and they know it. Okay. So it's like those that voted to impeach Trump are going to be losing, you know, in the next primary the same way. There's a lot of Republicans who are going to be out of office and a lot of people are going to take their place because they sold out. They sold out their country. They sold out the Constitution. They sold out a lot. And so this is why, you know, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. All right. So back to the notes here from Lindell TV. You should watch the special, Scientific Proof. Mike's on One American News. They're broadcasting it regularly. And just go to Mike Lindell TV. It's easy. All right. So the next one, Dr. Frank reveals that the 2020 national census data, this is where it gets really interesting. The 2010, I talk faster than I actually read. Dr. Frank's investigation reveals that the 2010 national census data was used to manipulate the 2020 election rolls and to inject phantom votes into the election totals. His scientific investigation documented and proved that numerous states throughout America had more people voting than lived in many of the counties. This is nationwide, folks. This isn't just in the six battleground states. So there's a lot of things that have to be corrected, including the entire, I believe, congressional count, too. All those elections have to be investigated. So there we go. Dr. Frank explains that the 2010 census was used to actually cast votes for voters that had either passed away or no longer lived in the county or state. So that's what they did. So they picked up people that weren't there anymore, that had moved or had died, and they cast votes for them anyway. Okay. That requires a lot of work. You've got to go through the census data. Well, here's the problem though. People moved, people died. And obviously, you got to watch the special because they show the same pattern, there's like two bumps in the census data. You know, and it appeared in every state, little different places. They manipulated, they massaged it, but county by county, you know, you take a look at all the counties, you know, per state, and they all had exactly the same bumps. They had all the same fraud. They had all the same algorithm, basically. So the algorithms were by state because they had to do this quickly, all right? Because, you know, they had to basically stop the count, put in the fraud votes, start the count up again, count the fraud votes, and then declare Biden, you know, the winner, even though we know he's a fraud. So that's how it happened. And again, we got him. All of the pathways there. So what are we waiting for? Certification of the fraud. That's what the audits are about. And I'll get to that in a minute. So the injection of 2020 national census data into the 2010, start again. The injection of the 2010 national census data into the 2020 election rolls facilitated a crime that some experts are calling the largest cybercrime in world history. Not bad, huh? Dr. Frank explains that the 2010 census was used to actually cast votes for voters that had either passed away or no longer lived in the county or state. I think I read that already. I'm sorry. In numerous documented cases, voters showed up to vote at their precincts only to be told they had already voted, when in fact they had not voted. What is now being revealed by the scientific investigation of Dr. Frank is that these Americans had their vote cast for them through a highly sophisticated computer program. Interesting, huh? In this television special, Dr. Frank explains to Mike Lindell what tipped him off that a cybercrime had been committed. Not just a few precincts, not in just a few precincts, counties, or swing states, but on a national basis. Dr. Frank also reveals that even in the states President Trump won, the president won those states by larger numbers than was reported. Scientific proof is the follow-up to the two-hour docu-movie Absolute Proof that was released on February 5th, 2021 and was seen by 70 million people in the first 4 days of its release. Not bad, huh? And over 150 million to date across 42 countries. Like Absolute Proof, the executive producers of Scientific Proof are Mike Lindell, Brandon House, H-O-W-S-E, and Mary Fanning. It was filmed by WVW Broadcast Network and directed by Brandon House. Okay, so anyway, those are the details. Those are the details on Scientific Proof. So what happens? So what happens because of that? Well, it gets interesting. So then I wrote another tweet. I call them a Facebook tweet. I don't do much on Twitter. And Parler, I post a lot of articles. Like I said, the really cool ones I can't put on Facebook. So I wrote, corporate America going leftist against a Georgia bill that cuts down on vote fraud is nuts. They need a real education. So part of the problem is corporate America thinks that by going leftist, they're going to be popular because all they see in the news is leftist news. They don't realize what I just told you, that 70 million people across America saw Absolute Proof, Mike Lindell's, you know, there's 80 million Trump supporters. So you got to figure, you know, the liberals aren't watching it. The reason to watch that film is it proves what you already know, that Trump won. It shows you how Trump won. Okay. People across the world are watching it because they want to know what the hell's going on in this country. All right. They know that we've got problems. They know we have a fraud administration. They know that China, North Korea, and Iran, as Claire Lopez said last Thursday, are doing everything they can as long as this lasts. They know what you don't know. Most Americans don't know. I think they believe strongly that the Biden, you know, illegal regime is not going to last. you know, for a bunch of reasons. And even if you put, you know, you install Kamala Harris in there, she is singularly the most unpopular person. First of all, men hate her because she sounds like every ex we've ever had. And is that a sexist statement? Yeah, absolutely. What are you going to do about it? Secondly, she's incompetent. I mean, she got where she got. You know, she got, you know, first of all, with her affair with Willie Brown, mayor of San Francisco, when she was in her 20s and he was 60. You know, so that kind of propelled her into life. And she, you know, I don't know her whole history, but I know that she has, you know, moved her way up to the top, not by expertise and by record and by good works, but by, you know, sliming her way up to the top somehow, some way. So here she is, you know, the fake vice president. She's like an Obama protege. Okay, so there she is. If she starts speaking from the White House and starts laughing at people dying from vaccines and laughs at illegal aliens killing people in this country and laughs at all the other things she's going to laugh at, she will be singularly the most unpopular person ever to stand behind the presidential podium falsely. Of course, it's only two people right now, but I mean, she'll be singularly unpopular in ways that you can't even imagine. So actually, in some ways, it'd actually be better if she were there. All right. So I got a few minutes left before Dr. Pry joins us. We'll get back to this. So then I wrote a Facebook a tweet about how this process is actually going to work. So we've got the evidence. Mike Lindell's done two great specials on it. Maricopa County is being audited. They're looking at Georgia is reforming their election laws. They have to do an audit. New Hampshire, Windham County is looking at their stuff. Fulton County, Michigan, they're looking at that. You know, there are places that are looking right now. And the reason is, and they already know that. See, the thing is, we know the vote fraud is there because this has already been proven. So the question is how to get them, not if, you know. Right? So I wrote this last night. We know how the election was stolen. Forensic audits will certify that so states can fix their elector count for Trump. Okay. So this is what's going on. All right. And I see this is going to take probably the rest of the year to do this, which is going to be great because then we have the next year to campaign against the vote frauders, and that would be Republicans and Democrats who participated in this process. Okay, I don't know if I'm going to get. I'll at least get you the basic information. And we'll talk more about it in the second hour. So we know how the election was stolen. That's what Mike Lindell's proving. Forensic audits will certify that, so states can fix their elector count for Trump. What that means is states like Arizona, for example, they're doing a full audit. They already know what they're going to find because they know the vote fraud was there. All right, but they have to certify it. Now, once the vote is certified as fraudulent, that disqualifies the Biden electors, okay? So that leaves the state free to send, say, you know what? My bad. We goofed. New evidence. Because there's no statute of limitations here. You know, just because, you know, if there were statute of limitations, if a president was inaugurated and they couldn't be removed, then there'd be no need for impeachment, all right? Nixon would serve that as terms. Ah, you can't touch me. Can't touch this. Do, 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 can't touch me. Do, 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 do. All right. But you can, you know, because presidents have to comply with the law. And that includes fraud, you know, people sitting in the Oval Office, you know, fraudulently. The law is going to catch up with them. And we have to because, again, we can't let crime pay. So Arizona certifies, hey, we goofed. You know, those Biden electors we sent in, yeah, that was a mistake. You know, we need to resend in Trump electors. You know, and because that's the correct result, as we found in our forensic audit, we are now certifying this, and this is the way it goes. And other states are going to do this too. Well, every time a state does this, it changes the electoral count. Instead of Biden having 305 fraudulent electors, you know, once Trump crosses that magic threshold, you know, of 270, you know, he gets his office back. Well, legally, but then it still has to be proven. It still has to be put in. Dr. Pry's with us right now. So let me just read you really – no, I'm going to save it. I'll save it for the second hour because I think this is going to be a fascinating process, and I don't want to shortchange Dr. Pry or the fact that I have a whole lot to tell you about how the pathway is for Trump back to office, hopefully this year. And Dr. Pry's going to disagree with me. He's already shaking his head going, Greg, I told you. I told you. And, let's find out exactly. What's going to happen. So let me just find, I'm scrolling down here and I should line these things up earlier, but, you know, I get to talking and I forget little details. All right. I'll be right back. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries?
How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
All right. Good morning, sir. What should we be talking about? What's in the news? What is missing from our report in national security for this week?
Well, I'm a little divided about whether I should talk about the topic I was going to discuss here, which is rather technical.
Now I want to hear it.
and might find it boring. But because your idea about bringing President Trump back, mm-hmm. you know, which I just caught at the end when I was listening, and sounds like it would be much more interesting, especially the question about whether we want to bring President Trump back after his last 4 years of performance. But let me talk to about, and I'm sure that'll get Josie spinned or up if she's listening. Some nice statements about that. But one of the what I wanted to talk about, or at least kick the show off talking about, mm-hmm. is the apparent decline of journalistic integrity when it comes to issues. I've had a personal example of this happen just last week when a national security journal called The National Interest, which is basically a neocon journal. It's middle of the road toward, it's kind of really all over the place.
I've heard of them.
A recent issue of the National Interest sounds like it's reliably leaning in a conservative direction because they've got an article in there, for example, challenging climate change. You know, which is a good thing, but it tends to take the neocon kind of a mainstream Washington perspective on most things. And to my astonishment, you know, they published an article, an older article, actually, by a guy named Matthew Galt that literally describes the EMP threat as a joke, you know, that it's laughable, that we shouldn't have to worry about the EMP threat.
And what an idiot.
An irresponsible, factually inaccurate article, you know, that I wrote a rebuttal to this article. And they refused to publish the rebuttal. So I'm going to, which to me is just another signpost to the decline of Western civilization, because once upon a time, journalistic integrity meant publishing factually accurate articles by real experts in the first place. And Matthew Galt and the sources that he cites in his article are not real experts. They're your typical creature that has grown up in recent years inside the Beltway and in this country, what you might call instant EMP experts or instant experts on anything that will buy them face time or voice time with the mainstream media. And they talk to experts.
Dr. Fascist.
Right, exactly.
He loves his camera time.
All the time. Yeah. It happens all the time. But you would think that a journal like the National Interest that's supposed to be dedicated to national security issues and, publishes a glossy magazine that it circulates around and is widely read inside the Beltway would be cautious about what they publish and make sure that the people who are writing to them know what they're talking about. And then if they made a mistake, you'd think they'd want to correct it so that their readers wouldn't be misled. Although I'm not really sure my rebuttal, the publication of my rebuttal is really necessary in the National Interest because the assertions that this Matthew Galt makes in his article are so clearly incorrect that I think people who are even casually familiar with the EMP threat, you know, there's been enough education out there by myself and others over the years that I think a lot of people will immediately say, well, this isn't right. you know, for example, Galt is hyper-partisan in his article and criticizes the Republican Party platform in 2016, the platform on which President Trump ran, for writing the following, including the following, in the Republican Party platform. And I'm quoting from the 2016 Republican Party platform. A single nuclear weapon detonated at high altitude over this country would collapse our electric grids and other critical infrastructures and endanger the lives of millions. With North Korea in possession of nuclear missiles and Iran close to having them, an EMP is no longer a theoretical concern. It is a real threat. You know, now, yeah. Galt doesn't mention, and this is what I call in journalism lying by omission, he doesn't mention the fact that is a strategic and scientifically accurate assessment of the threat from North Korea that is derived directly from the EMP Commission. You know, the Congressional EMP Commission, which was a bipartisan commission, was supported by both Republicans and Democrats, and comprises the free world's foremost experts on EMP. And so it is from them, but Galt doesn't even mention the existence of the EMP Commission. He makes it sound, because that, why does he not do that? Is it because he's ignorant? Is it because he doesn't know about the EMP Commission? Or is it because he wants to try to pretend, he wants to mislead the readers into thinking that EMP is some kind of obsession of right-wing Republicans, you know? And so he's so intellectually dishonest elsewhere in the article that I suspect that it's frankly intellectual dishonesty and not a more excusable ignorance.
No, it's just the propaganda. You know, the big tech tells people what they want them to hear. The media tells folks what they want them to hear. It's like I heard a recent quote, you're going to love this, where they said that the Trump administration said this was the most secure election in our history. Well, the Trump administration didn't say that. Chris Krebs, this guy that you can't stand,
right,
said it. Because he was in charge of, I forgot the office he was in charge of, but they take, this is how they do it. They'll expand on one person who hates the Trump administration, who's trying to sabotage them, who was I guess, in charge of some kind of election security, totally botched it, and then said this was the most secure election when everybody knows it was false, and he was fired. But that's how they do it.
Yeah,
they twist
right.
it. Yeah.
They should have fired him years before that. Chris Krebs, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which
that's
also was the lead. It was the lead in the Department of Homeland Security and, frankly, the lead in the whole U.S. government for protecting our civilian critical infrastructures, not only from cyber, but from EMP attack and implementing President Trump's EMP executive order. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all through his tenure, you know, I was urging the Trump administration, including in books I've written, you know, that mention this guy by name and that spell out the fact that this guy you know, was not a competent person to be in charge of CISA. You know, Chris Krebs, look at the name, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. You'd think that the director of that, the guy who's charged with protecting us from EMP and cyber attacks, would be an expert in EMP and cyber attacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
A technical expert. But he wasn't. You know, he's a lawyer, and he was a former lobbyist for Microsoft. And he was a holdover from the Bob administration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy was hostile to President Trump and his agenda from the beginning. He actively sabotaged President Trump's efforts through his EMP executive order and other executive orders on cyber security, actively sabotaged their implementation. Yet I couldn't move the Trump administration to fire this guy. You know,
well, they were listening to the wrong people.
Only at the last minute, when he came out and basically made that egregious lie. Not only was it a lie, and did he deserve to get fired for that, about the idea that this was the most, this election had the greatest integrity in history, but he was probably, I'll bet if an investigation was ever conducted, Chris Krebs probably was one of the leaders in corrupting that election and making, and throwing the election to the Democrats and to the Biden administration. And that's an example of why I'm not an enthusiast for having President Trump back in office, frankly, you know, because when he had the opportunity and the responsibility and the power, you know, he demonstrated real incompetence when it came to governing this country. And the doctor fascists that you hate so much, was empowered by. We have Dr. Fascist lording it over us today.
Oh, I know.
Chris,
I know.
Because,
but
the, you know, because
a really
of President
important
Trump.
Reason. Yeah, there's a really important reason for putting Trump back in office, despite how you feel about him. And that reason is because we can't have crime pay. We cannot have the Democrats get away with stealing the election. We have to put Trump back just to show that that we do have integrity, that we do have a constitution, we do have a process, and we do have a method of restoring, you know, the correct outcome of correcting the election. So even if Trump were a bumbling incompetent, you know, if Trump were Al Gore, I'd still want him back in simply because, and I'd fight him once he got back in with all the issues that we disagree with. And that makes sense. But you can't allow this to continue. We cannot function as a nation allowing a fraud administration in the White House. Okay. And the good news is we've got them. We know the evidence. It's out there. I don't know if you've seen scientific proof or Mike Lindell's first one, absolute proof. But it is.
Oh,
so...
I don't even need to see that. You know.
Okay.
You know, I'm glad it's out there. I'm glad Mike Lindell is doing that. You know, he's done it in cooperation with a good friend of mine, Brannon House. It's just so obvious. Anyone who is even casually paying attention to how that election happened. And anybody who's somewhat objective, can arrive at no other conclusion but the election was stolen. You know, we don't have to get into the mechanics of computer science and how the Dominion voting machines worked and all the rest. Isn't it enough to know that conservative voices, in violation of the First Amendment, were suppressed during the election?
The ultimate voter suppression.
Conservative voices suppressed by internet giants, you know, that have a far left political agenda, you know, and the New York Post story was not the only example. I mean, there was massive suppression of freedom of speech in order to get Joe Biden elected, you know, and then the lack of election integrity in terms of, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. You don't have to be a genius to see that when you've got, millions of these absentee ballots or so-called, you know, these ballots being flooded in, that the potential for fraud, that mechanism is the single greatest way of stuffing ballot boxes. And when there was a little bit of bipartisanship in this country and there had been a commission established to look at voter integrity, how do we make sure that we have free and fair elections? The fact of that, the way that was done. And a third factor, you know, is how the Constitution was violated, you know, with state's attorney generals changing the voting rules.
Yep.
Changing the voting rules unconstitutionally. So it's in our face. It's in our face. It's so in our face that's why the Democrats brought 25,000 troops in to protect the Capitol, because they know that they stole the election, and they know we know stole the election, and they know that it was
they stole it.
Outrageous and so unconstitutional and so strike at our freedom that they felt that there might legitimately be more than just what happened on January 6th, that the people might storm the Capitol in outrage.
No, but that's not how it's going to happen.
That's
how they would do it. But we are doing it by forensic audit. We're going to recertify Biden. You know, we're going to replace, you know, fraudulent Biden electors with Trump electors. And I think it's going to happen in Arizona. I think they'll be the first. I think other states will follow. I think the electoral vote count is going to change in Trump's favor above 270. How much I don't know. It depends how far this gets followed. But anything over 270 is enough to prove Biden can't stay there. And then it goes to Congress to either certify that or not, and then the Supreme Court. And that's what I'm going to talk about in the second hour, is that pathway. And this is how I think it's going to happen. And again, regardless of how you feel about President Trump, for the integrity of the office of the president, we have to follow this through, and we have to get rid of that fraud. That's my position.
Oh, I certainly agree with you there. You know,
okay,
even though I'm very
disappointed talk about Trump.
In Trump's competency in terms of the way he managed his administration and blew it, you know, in order to restore and fight back and restore constitutional integrity, you know, mm-hmm. to this country, because we don't. The Constitution has been shredded in front of our eyes, you know. And so, I would agree with you. Restoring, punishing those and reversing the outcome of what was a stolen election is absolutely mm-hmm. necessary in order to get America back.
And that means jail time, too. And that means arrests and jail time.
Yes, that does mean arrest and jail time. It's just mm-hmm. outrageous that the people who committed a coup d'etat in this country and beyond mm-hmm. arrest and jail time, you know, if Trump were to come back, he probably wouldn't do this because he still surrounds himself with these mealy-mouthed, do-nothing rhino Republican advisors. But if Trump did come back, or whoever in the future, if we enough to get a Republican, a conservative, you know, somebody who believes in the Constitution back in power, mm-hmm. not only should there be jail time for the perpetrators of the coup d'etat,
mm-hmm.
but we really ought to abolish certain government agencies, get rid of them, you know, because they've proven to be too much of a threat to our Constitution. Just as many people, you know, the FBI has not been with us since the founding. You know, it's only been with us since the 1920s, and it was only mm-hmm. reluctantly agreed to, you know, by members of Congress at the time to have this concept of a national police force, reluctantly agreed to because precisely because they were afraid that mm-hmm. it would end up becoming what it has become, you know, part of an administrative state that is too powerful and too willing.
Well, Congress could dump them anytime because there's nothing in the Constitution. Yeah, because there's nothing in the Constitution about the FBI.
And the same thing with the CIA. Yeah. Same thing mm-hmm. with the CIA. You know, even though it's my alma mater and I work for the CIA, okay, you know, it's not like we would have no intelligence if we didn't have the CIA. Every military mm-hmm. service has got its own intelligence agency, you know, the Navy has an intelligence agency, Air Force has got an intelligence agency, you know,
the
Army has
better?
Got intelligence, we've still got the National Security Agency, you know, there's all kinds of intelligence agencies out there, you know, but the CIA was one of the leaders, you know, in joining with the FBI. John F. Kennedy almost got rid of them when the Bay of Pigs, you know, he felt that they had misled him over the Bay of Pigs, and they did, you know. It's very dangerous to have agencies and bureaucracies that become powers unto themselves.
Yeah,
you know,
that was my question.
That don't understand that they serve the president and they serve the people. But go ahead, sure.
Well, that's my question. Basically, do they feel that they are their own independent government? They know what's best for America. They get this arrogance of the insulation of their bubble and feel closer to foreign intelligence agencies, because I know a lot of stuff was shared with Australia and Italy and England in terms of spying on Trump, because Obama said, well, we can't do it, but if you guys can do it for us and give us the information, it's okay. So is there a feeling at the CIA that they do feel themselves more powerful, more important, and better able to serve the country than the president that they're supposed to serve?
Oh, it's obvious that they do. It's obvious that they have. And maybe it would be better off if, you know, mm-hmm. what I said is they become a power unto themselves, okay?
Yeah.
But in a way, that's not quite accurate, okay? What's happened is even worse, because if they were a power unto themselves, and they had that attitude, they'd be a threat to both parties, okay? And then I think the process, the checks and balances would tend to work to rein them in more. But what they've become is part, the deep state has allied itself with the Democrat Party and with the overall left-wing totalitarian movement. And that's even more dangerous, you know, because now they're not just a power unto themselves, but they're a power that serves a one-party state, you know, which is where they're trying to move us. And their loyalties are to that concept of the one-party state. You can see this in, you know, for example, the last one of my early criticisms of the Trump administration was his choice of the Director of National Intelligence, who was Coates, okay? Former Senator Coates, Dan Coates, okay, who served as DNI for 2 years, and you know, because Pence, he was a friend of Mike Pence, And so Mike Pence wanted to reward people from Indiana. And so that's how we ended up with Dan Coats. And for 2 years, Dan Coats and then his successors, you know, didn't do anything. I mean, I just thought it was a flare in the night, a test of how competent Dan Coats was, that he did nothing to try to reverse the Obama national intelligence estimate claiming that President Trump was basically an agent of Russia. You know, here you've got President Trump's own director of national intelligence defending the Obama national intelligence estimate, unclassified national intelligence estimate, by the way. You know, these things are almost never unclassified, but it was unclassified for political purposes to feed the narrative that President Trump was an illegitimate president, that he was a pawn of Russia, and his own guy, that President Trump, you know, stood by him for 2 years, even though this guy was undermining the president's integrity, you know? So,
Mike Pence is a story unto himself. I think Mike Pence is, as we learn more about Mike Pence, as he tries to run again, you know, as the deep state Republican, how much was he dishing out the secret information? Was he leaking like crazy? Was he doing everything he could to undermine Trump, you know, and bring in people that would also undermine Trump? Is there more to Mike Pence than we've been told? I think there is.
Unbelievable. Pence should have like zero career in the future. Zero career. Okay. He failed the American people when he was put to the test. He's more responsible than anybody, I think. You know, one of the things we've talked about this before, but one of the things I have been upset with conservatives and the right, including Tucker Carlson, who I very much like and very much admire, but even Tucker Carlson, you know, criticizes the people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, and we're all supposed to condemn them, and they're supposed to be considered evil and examples.
Was it they storm or walk in? Most people walked in.
Well, however they did it, if they had stormed in and did the kind of things that Black Lives Matter did, it would be perfectly justified. You know, moderation, what is the statement? You know, moderation in defense of freedom is no virtue, okay? Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. I really believe in that. And, Black
That's
Lives Matter, the difference that the conservatives can't get between violence by Black Lives Matters and Antifa is that serves the purpose of tyranny, and they are anti-freedom. They are the legions of tyranny, and that's why it's not just their violence that's unacceptable. It's the violence in service of an evil cause, okay? Yeah. But people who are trying to defend the Constitution and defend their liberties and are protesting, even violently, against the seizure, the illegal, unconstitutional seizure of power that has happened in this country, those people are heroes. You know, and I'd like to hear more conservatives saying that, more conservatives defending. Now, obviously, there were clearly some nuts that were involved in January 6th, you know, wandering around dressed in weird costumes and stuff. But obviously, real heroes, including
someone calls themselves a Republican.
That heroic woman, veteran, you know, Ashley Babbitt, you know, who lost her life. Ashley Babbitt.
We still don't know who shot her.
Our future history.
We don't know who killed her.
And nobody's interested in the fact
that
she got.
Why is that a secret?
Right, and how that happened.
Yeah.
But,
this is fascinating because, you know, because you're there, you've got the insight, and this is why I like to ask you these questions. But there's one thing that people forget about the whole January 6th, you know, whatever you want to call it. I call it the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In, is that the Republicans, the Trump supporters, were there to support what Congress was doing. Congress was there taking the certification of the various states' electors and challenging them. Arizona had just come up for a challenge when they broke in. Okay, so the timing is way too coincidental that this happened on a day when Trump supporters were there to support Congress. So the idea of this being an armed insurrection to overthrow the government is laughable. It's absolutely pure propaganda, and there's a word for whatever it is directly opposite. Almost dialectical, you know, whatever, the Marxist dialectic. But basically, they're lying, saying that Trump supporters were there to overthrow the government. No, they're supporting. They wanted the electoral challenge. They were there to back Congress up. If you look at Trump's speech, he even said, let's go support you know, Congress in their challenge of the electoral vote count. Now there was something
right.
we had a
and
guess.
And then when Pence decided to scotch mm-hmm. the whole thing, you know, it was shortly after that. I think mm-hmm. that the people found out about that and they were outraged, legitimately outraged, and that's why that happened. But going back, I have to say something about Pence, okay?
Or yeah, please do.
An example, it's really not about Pence, but here's an example of, I think one of the reasons why we conservatives and we people who are outside of the Beltway, I probably can't count myself as one of those, even though I live outside the Beltway. I basically, everything I do deals with inside the Beltway, but we've been losing for decades is because not only the Republican Party, but a lot of the organizations that we support, that we think the way we do and share our values, really don't. A couple of weeks ago, I got this excited email from the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought them up. They're a bunch of fundraisers, like the NRA, they fundraise.
Mike Pence, yeah, but, you know, they brought Mike Pence on. And, you know, they're asking for donations. And this big honcho at Heritage, you know, just had a thrill down his leg that he got a cell phone call from Mike Pence, who had agreed that he was going to come on board at Heritage. And now, you know, I should empty my pockets and all conservatives should empty their pockets and send money to the Heritage Foundation. Why? Because Mike Pence is working at the Heritage Foundation now. Why?
God.
Talk about being out of touch. And not understanding your base, right? You know, I actually ended up having an email. Usually they don't respond when you write back, you know, to these things. But I ended up having a pretty much knockdown drag out with this character, you know, he couldn't believe it, you know, that I wrote back and told him that, that the fact that they had hired Pence showed how out of touch they were with the people. And that I would never make a donation to an organization that decided to embrace somebody who basically betrayed our cause and betrayed the people. And, this guy, not only did he fail, you know, during the critical moment in history, when the elections and the Constitution was at stake, but then actually went to the inauguration, went to the inauguration. And as did many
the
people who are supposed to be conservatives. Pardon?
Yeah. The installation.
You know, the position that every conservative and Republican should be taking is exactly the position that the left and the Democrats took to President Trump. You know, that this is not my president. Biden is not my president. That he was not legitimately elected. Power in the Senate and the House, we don't recognize it as legitimate. They have to prove to us that they legitimately took power. And they haven't done that. And it shows the fact that our side, you know, the people who supposedly represent us in Washington and represent us in these think tanks, that they don't have the moral courage to do that, you know, shows that's the problem in this country, how we have been we have really had no representation. The people who voted for Trump, those 75 million voters, we aren't represented by the Republican Party, by most of the people who posture as conservatives, or by the institutions like the Heritage Foundation. They're supposed to be the most conservative institutions there are. You know, they're all part of the one-party state game, really, as long as they've got their snouts in the Washington pig trough, they're okay. No, it doesn't matter if they... You know, what kind of radical left-wing policies get involved, whether it's destroying the economy over climate change or taking away people's guns or transfer or making public policy based on 26 genders instead of two biological sexes. Oh, they'll put up some symbolic resistance to that. And we'll hear an oink out of them every now and again, you know, supposedly objecting to these. But they never stop the substance of the policies from becoming enacted and becoming part of our lives out here where all of America lives,
Yeah. Well, let's say, for example, Heritage, you know, if we could secure a fraction of a percent of Heritage's budget here at Action Radio, we would get more freedom, more ideas out there, more inspiration for this country than they've ever thought of. We have more ideas here at Action Radio. I mean, me personally, I have more ideas than Heritage, you know, in a day than Heritage has had in the last 20 years. That sounds arrogant, but I think it's true. You know, I just wrote a bill recently, which you may or may not be interested in, you know.
Oh my God!
What,
you and your bills? You know.
Wait a minute. Now hold on a second. I think about this.
Okay.
All right. I know.
Go on.
I know. All right. You see. All right. Okay, look, I'll convince you one day. But I wrote just to show. Well, I sent this to Robert Francis Kennedy of the Children's Health Defense Organization that I basically rewrote the section on product liability for vaccine manufacturers, changing the shall not be liable to shall be liable. It was a really simple thing to do. It's more complicated than that. But if you see the bill, but. What this shows, what I've learned just through my own work with legislation, is how deceptively simple it is to make massive changes by simply, you know, amending the laws that they did. And I don't know where this is going to go. I mean, obviously, yet. But say, for example, Heritage picked up on this, okay, or some conservative organization said, you know, this, and they started getting behind these bills. That would have major national impact. Instead of sitting around there in their cushy offices raising funds and spending money, you know, and like I say, I put the NRA, Heritage, you know, a lot of these think tanks and that same kind of crew is basically they're fundraisers. That's all they do. All right. But if they put just a little bit of effort into saying, here's positive change, because the biggest problem with conservatives I see is the lack of a program, lack of an agenda. They always play defense. And they always play defense badly, but they've never taken the offense. They never go out and say, this is a better bill. You know, if people complain that vaccine manufacturers have no product liability, I said, okay, here's a bill to change that. If you want to change, here it is. It's this simple. Take this bill, get it to Congress, put it in the media, and let's start talking about it. Okay. Now, I know you're not convinced yet. You will be. I am convinced that I can convince you. You know, once you see some
I am
action.
More okay. and more, I am less and less convinced every time we talk. I am
okay.
less and less convinced every time we talk. And
obviously, I got to change my approach then.
Let me use you. Let me.
Oh, doubting Thomas.
I'm hoping
oh,
that I
oh, ye of little faith
of the futility of what you're doing.
Okay.
To me, that's just an opiate and a distraction,
mm-hmm.
and it underestimates it really underestimates the magnitude of the crisis we face. To think that bill writing. You know, is where we are, and that writing another bill. Let me put it to you this way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize for having to use a sledgehammer. All right,
be blunt.
But this is
I
what that
it.
Sounds like to me. Now, let me put it in starker terms. You know, to me, this sounds like, you know, somebody. You're in your house at night. You know, in bed with your wife, and a rapist breaks into the bedroom. And is raping your wife, who symbolizes the Constitution. And the reaction is to go to the library and draft a bill or find a law in the library first to prove to the rapist that what he's doing is illegal, okay? And if that's not good enough, while the rape of your wife continues, to go and write a better law that is even more stringent in terms of the penalties for rape and expect that that's going to solve the problem. We're way past that, my friend. You know, they're raping the Constitution. They've shredded mm-hmm. the Constitution. Business as usual, politics as usual isn't going to fix the problem. You know, that is an opiate. That's a distraction.
Okay, but here's
you know,
the problem,
we're going to have to get a lot tougher than that and a lot more
okay.
proactive to pull the bastard off of your wife.
So that I'm not married.
We need to get a right. Well,
no, I know what you mean.
Good.
But here's
so
the thing, though. But your solution.
Offense is offended
okay.
since it's just a symbolic.
I think you're.
Here, okay? But every time
yeah.
you start talking to me about oh, I'm going to write another bill. You know, we've been. It's not true that there haven't been all kinds of bills and proactive legislation by conservatives and the like. The problem is that there's the conservative voices who support that sort of thing. People like Newt Gingrich, for example, during the Camelot years for conservatives, and when we had Newt Gingrich and Ronald Reagan as a team, okay, we briefly, you know, managed to have some control, some power, so that we could get parts of the conservative agenda through. But the truth is, except for those rare exceptions in history, most of the time, our side is comprised of people. Well, look at our current leadership. They're just like our current leadership. That's what the Republican Party has been throughout most of its life. It's been Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and all these losers who don't care about, who don't have a central core values. You can't move a bill without the support of that leadership. And so bills come up and they die, and they end up going nowhere.
Well, most of the bills should die.
We've got much, before you even start thinking about submitting bills and writing bills, you know, we've got to come up with a way to re-empower the people, to restore the connection between the values and objectives of the people and their representatives.
That's what the bills do.
And now you're missing the point.
You're missing the point of what I'm doing. It's the bills that unite the people. Remember when we talked about committees of correspondence? I think your example is very dramatic, and I think it's very wrong about the, you know, if you take a situation, you're talking about a self-defense situation. So you're putting it in terms of a violent restoration of the Constitution. If someone's raping your wife, the thing to do is you shoot the bastard. Okay. I mean, that's the obvious, simple solution.
I
agree with you.
But what you're saying is,
rather than the peaceful, logical, you know, inspiring bills that I write, I should advocate what you're advocating, which is violence. Okay. So I disagree with you. I disagree with you strongly. I think that we do have the right way to do this. I do believe that we are the equivalent of the old committees of correspondence. And I want to thank you for bringing that about. But your example is false. It doesn't apply to this situation because the Constitution is written.
To this situation.
Well, not the same way that I'm working.
It does apply.
Hold on,
to this
it's my turn. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. No, because the Constitution is written.
Well, tell
words.
Me when it's my turn, because I'm. Not,
I will exactly.
I'm
not, but the Constitution
like
is
I
written
said,
words.
I'm less and less convinced every time we talk. But let me know when.
Okay,
it's my
and
turn.
And that's fine, and I'm really glad that you're on the show. But think about that. But the Constitution is written words. It's not a physical person being raped, okay? Now, is it being destroyed? Absolutely. But the solution is, you know, is to work, is better words, is better bills, is better, you know, because this is what we go by. We are a society based on laws, okay? Now, the left is using the laws in their favor. They basically made up laws in the election. They made up their own policies. It's like they declared rape legal. Okay, so let's put it in the terms of your example. All right, so all of a sudden the left says rape is legal, so therefore you can't do anything about the person that's raping your wife. Okay, that's where you're going with that example. What I'm saying is that's wrong. You can't do that. So you change the law, then you shoot the bastard. Okay, you know. So there's two different ways of going about this. But if you want real change, if you want to bring about, you know, the restoration of the Constitution by shooting the bastard, how would you apply that to the situation today? Now it's your turn.
Okay. The way you would apply that is use the committees of correspondence not to write another law, you know, and waste your time doing that, and which creates false hope among the people that merely by doing things like, Greg Pangless has written another law, that'll show them. You know, that's never going to go anywhere. What you do is you use the committees of correspondence the way we did in the first American Revolution to organize civil disobedience. Organize civil disobedience. And it doesn't have to be violence in the way you mean it, by shooting the bastard, okay? But it can be the kinds of things that Gandhi did in India, you know, that were not drafting laws, but acts of civil disobedience that really hurt the power structure. It can be doing things like they did in Russia and Eastern Europe to throw off their
I love all that stuff. I have no problem with that.
But add bold acts of civil disobedience. For example, organizing. Mm-hmm. Let me talk. It's my turn.
I'm sorry.
You know, for example, an example that I think I've used on your show before. One of the things I think a committee of correspondents should do is to organize the 75 million Trump voters, get us well enough organized so that people at some point could say, well, this year we're not going to pay any taxes. We're not going to pay any taxes unless certain demands are met in terms of election integrity, for example, to make sure that we do have free and fair elections in this country. You know, organize people so that we can, in the states, so that we can have nullification in the states of federal laws that we believe violate the Constitution. You know,
how do you do that?
So that we can say and organize. And by bringing pressure to bear on And you may not need the pressure to bear because we have some governors who are real leaders who are defying things right now. Your own governor DeSantis down there. You know, I saw him on Mark Levin yesterday.
Yeah, me too.
You know, here's a man that I think would stand up for the people. And if there were 75 million voters, a man with presidential aspirations too, you know, who got behind him and encouraged him and said, yes, sir, you know, don't let them take away people's guns in Florida. Yes, sir, we support your abolition of teaching of critical race theory in the schools. And that's something else people should do when you're organized at the grassroots level is go to your school board meetings and your parent-teacher things and speak out against critical race theory, all right? That's the kind of direct action. That's where we are, you know, where we need direct action at the federal level by doing things like withholding income taxes. And sure, people would go to jail, but they can't put millions of us in jail, all right? And the and the Washington elites are so used to being obeyed. You know, that's what they're counting on. They're counting on people being afraid, being passive, being sheep. I think in part that's what your Dr. Fascist exercise is all about, my friend. You know, it's that scene in 1984 where the protagonist, the hero, Winston, is being asked by his torturer, how many fingers am I holding up? The guy holds up three fingers, and he's told, I'm only holding up one finger. And the torture continues and continues until Winston says, yes, one finger, one finger. You know, they're trying to condition us to accept their reality. Reality is whatever they tell us it is. And this whole COVID thing has got a more deeper, more sinister purpose, I believe, than just a scientific disagreement over whether mask wearing, you know, is effective or not. Because obviously the scientific facts aren't driving this. You know, but
it's a marketing campaign.
The resistance needs to be at the federal level, at the state level. Yeah. But ultimately, the resistance has got to come from the people. And it's got to be a lot more robust and muscular than just writing bills. It's got to be actual direct actions like that.
See,
but the ones
I see them working together.
They're holding taxes, protesting yourself, people getting out there and defending their kids in terms of their public schools, putting pressure on governors who support us. Like Ron DeSantis, okay, to encourage and back him up and say, yeah, you can go even further than that in terms of protecting our gun rights and our other civil liberties. And that's what I mean by now in academia, all these actions that I'm describing would be considered acts of violence or aggressions, microaggressions on a personal level. Macroaggressions as a group.
Well, they just don't want the protest.
The left has even redefined violence to not entail, you know, shooting people or hitting people or anything like that. And undergirding this, too, and let's not be cowards about it. The reason we have a Second Amendment is precisely because the founders feared, you know, this most. What is happening right now is what the founders most feared, is that the government would become a tyranny and threaten our civil liberties. And that's why we have gun rights, and that's why we do have a Second Amendment. And I, for one, am not willing to be a coward and say, oh, you know, there aren't any circumstances that would justify violence. You know, the system has taught us just this past year how effective violence is for the left in getting what they want, right? Black Lives Matter, Antifa. These people haven't gone to jail. They haven't been persecuted. They've been able to, with relatively little effort, okay, through their acts of violence, to get their agenda, you know, up front and center in this system. And we need to fight fire with fire. Now, I'm not advocating for, you know, for starting with that by any means. But when it comes down to it, it's every person's going to be every person's individual choice about how far are we going to let the state push them. What are you going to do when they come to your house, you know, and they want to take your guns or to arrest you for not sending your kid to public school, you know, after they abolish private schools and after they abolish homeschooling? No, you must send your child in to be brainwashed by the government. Do we stand by and take that? You know, at some point, real violence might become necessary. And if that does become necessary, then I want 75 million Americans at least to be organized, to be able to do it right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're making an either-or choice, and I have to let you go in a minute because there's a bunch of topics I want to cover in the last 45 minutes, but this has been fascinating. Thank you very much. And like I say, you're always free to disagree with me as much as you want to. I don't see this as an either-or situation. I see that the bills work with the protests. So in other words, if you're protesting, you know, and you don't have a replacement for what is, you're missing half your battle. It's like if you protest against, you know, the fraudulent Biden administration, what are you going to replace it with? If you protest against, you know, severe, draconian, unconstitutional gun laws, what are you going to do instead? You know, so in other words, instead of
what are you
going to
do? Follow the Constitution. We already
well,
have
I know,
the laws
yeah.
on what
but what,
supposed
what I'm saying
to
is. But what I'm saying is that the legislation, citizen legislation, goes hand in hand with citizen protest, with citizen advocacy, with citizen journalism. It's all part of citizen action. Okay. So in other words, this is the component that's been missing. We have citizen action. We've had protests for, you know, most of our
history.
Well,
I don't agree that it's been missing. I don't agree that it's been missing. I mean, and Heritage Foundation has put out model bills and things like that for many years. And I'm not saying it doesn't have some place. Okay.
Yeah.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
It has. Some place it can be useful as I don't want to use the word propaganda. That's not an accurate description. It can be accurate as a model about, well, here's how things should be. But bills and people who like to write bills and bill writing, you know, can become such an obsessive thing, and it becomes an opiate and a distraction because people think that, oh, I've got this bill and this is going to solve the problem. It's 1%. Maybe 5% of the solution, 95% of the solution is what I'm talking about. If we had normal times and we had a legislative process that was fair and balanced and worked the way it was supposed to work in the Constitution, then bill writing would make sense as your chief preoccupation. But these aren't normal times. This is not the times we're living in. We're living in a crisis. That is unprecedented in our history. And, you know, I mean, the bad guys are in there raping your wife, which is the Constitution. And you need to take more direct, more muscular action to stop this and to reverse things. And wasting your time on bill writing is going to be, if that's the focus of the strategy, it's going to fail.
Well, I've been told that before. I'm sure I'll be told it again. I appreciate it. I disagree, obviously. And I'm going to continue on my path because I think it's going to do more than you think it's going to do, which is fine. But I do appreciate it, and I will think about it as I always do. And at that point, I'm going to let you go. You've got the last word on that. Well, actually, I think I did. But anyway, thank you. Thank you for a very interesting discussion, and I hope I can prove you wrong. Let's take it up again next
week. Okay, I hope you can prove me wrong, too. I'd be delighted if you did.
Well, let's find out.
But thank you for having me, and at least you let alternative views be expressed, unlike the national interest.
The national interest. I had something on that. Look up their about section. I think I already got rid of it, but they use their examples of people that they follow. They talk about realism, and their statesmen that they want to follow is Disraeli, Bismarck, and Henry Kissinger. Those are their statesmen models for who they think are the best examples of how we should live. So read their about section. I think you'll find it pretty amusing.
No, yeah, they're neocons. I mean, they're pretty unapologetic about that. So
yeah,
you know. But even neocons should get the science right, and it's inexcusable, you know. By the way, before we go, the last thing I'd like to wish a happy birthday to General Harry Goldsworthy, who's now 170, turned 107 on Saturday.
Wow!
And here's an example of the kind of man that we once had in this country, General Harry Goldsworthy. Most of us don't know him. But he was responsible when we were losing the missile race to the Soviet Union. He turned it around, and he got the Minuteman ICBM up and running in 2 years, you know, which is something like a technological miracle when we weren't able to make it happen. That's the kind of man, you know, that made this country great and safe and defended freedom. No Dr. Fauci he. And the fact that we have gone from a place where we had many people like him, whose name should be a household name, because he played a important role in saving this country from nuclear annihilation during the Cold War by building that deterrent at a time when it looked like we were going to lose the missile race to the Soviet Union. You know, where are the General Goldworthies today? You know, with the incompetent fools that we have running this country, it's just, you know, another example of civilizational decline to think about where we were then and where we are now.
Yeah.
But that's
very
my
true.
Last word on this anyway.
All right, sir. All right. Thank you very much. Let's do it again next week.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Right now. That's Dr. Peter Pry, who is always fascinating and just has a wide variety and just the information, the insights that we're able to get from him, especially in terms of Washington. I completely disagree with him. You know, if I thought this were not valuable, I wouldn't waste my time doing it. I think it's going to be incredibly valuable, and I think I'll be proven right. And we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's the nice thing about having my own show is I get to get my own last word. Let me tell you a bit about Milton, or where I live and broadcast from, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio, for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live, too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoops Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen.
Yeah, it's an amazing place here, and so the potential is just incredible. We're really just getting started here in Milton, but it's something else. Anyway, let me play one more thing once we get our music theme here. So I made this actually for Milton, for the city of Milton, the Chamber of Commerce, and some other folks to tell you more about the town. All right, be right back.
Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, I'm back. Feel free to give me a call, 215-383-3832. When we last left our election discussion here, I had four what I call Facebook tweets. And so I've got them up in front of me right now. And I want to get back to what I was talking about before. That was interesting about Dr. Pry. It's always of interest to me, someone that you know, as intelligent and dedicated as he is, you know, to be able to engage that person on, you know, the whole status, the whole idea of Action Radio. And it is a new concept. And so I don't think anybody really knows, and that includes me probably more than anybody, exactly where this is going to go and what the potential is. I think, though, I want to find out if I do this. There's a lot of motivation behind, you know, what I do, and I do believe in this. And, I, you know, the bills are only part of it. A lot of what we do also is investigation. You know, there was a three-part series I did on starting March 15th on which came first, you know, the vaccine or the virus. And I am convinced through what I found that the vaccine came first, that there's much more to this than, in fact, Claire Lopez tweeted out this morning, you know, about the Wuhan lab and the gain of function research and things like that. So word is getting out. It really started with Steve Hilton. He's the one that first alerted me to this gain of function research. In other words, making viruses more deadly. Well, why would you want to do that? You know, wouldn't you want to kill the viruses? Is that the main goal? I mean, yes, understand them, see how they work and things like that. But why would you create more deadly versions, you know, man-made versions that wouldn't occur naturally? And then, you know, unless you're trying to use them as a weapon or some other purpose. And I think the purpose was, you know, China punishing the world and a worldwide, you know, vaccine marketing campaign that involved China, the WHO, the World Health Organization, Dr. Fascist, Big Pharma, and all these companies, you know, world, and all the Dr. Fascists worldwide and the big pharma companies worldwide. That's what it's all about. Back to the election. So the title of the show today, The Pathway for Trump to Push Out Biden and His Fraud Regime. And I said the background for it, you know, earlier in the first half hour. So then I wrote these four Facebook tweets, as I call them. We know how the election was stolen. Forensic audits will certify that so states can fix their elector count for Trump. And I went over this in the first half hour, too. So what's going on right now? States like Arizona, I think Georgia's engaged in some of this, New Hampshire, Michigan, you know, state legislators are saying, wait a minute, you know, we got to correct those laws that you passed at the last minute, you know, using COVID as an excuse. So the feeling was that, and a lot of Americans still believe this, that anything the government does in a pandemic is okay, regardless of how much it trounces on the Constitution. That's simply not true. And so what's being done in the courts and in the state legislators and some of the other places is that they say, no, you can't do that. And the states are for the next election, they're changing the laws either back to what they were or they're making it a lot tougher to cheat on the election. That's what Georgia did. And so the fact that these you know, corporations like Coke and Delta, who've never actually read the law, you know, that's what we all believe, are coming out against something they have no idea. It's a marketing campaign. You know, why are most retail places still requiring their employees to wear masks when there's been evidence since the Dutch study and before that that masks, you know, work in a surgical setting, but they don't work in a retail setting, okay? And yet they're still requiring it. Why? You know, they think they're being – they think that's what public relations wants. They think that their PR departments are saying, well, if you want to maintain good PR, then, you know, keep your employees wearing masks. It's a bunch of nonsense. The first company – you know, be it Walmart or some of the big supermarkets or someone that, you know, says publicly, masks are a joke. We're not going to have our employees wear them anymore unless they want to. If they want to, that's fine, but they don't have to. You know, that company is going to rocket to the top and it's going to be fascinating. And then, of course, the other company, the sheep companies will follow suit. All right. So I'm digressing again. So we've got the situation where the forensic audits, the actual study is done. Once they certify, I think I said this earlier, but once they certify, okay, that the election in their state or certain counties in their state was a total fraud, all right, I got to take a quick break for a second. I'll be right back. Oh, sorry about that. Once they certify that these elections are a fraud, that will then give them the ability to replace the Biden fraud electors with proper Trump electors, okay? That's going to change the vote count. That's going to change the electoral vote count, all right? Now, we know one of the ironies of this is that we know Trump won the popular vote about 80 million to 66 million, all right? Which means those 16 states that said they're going to vote for whoever wins the popular vote regardless of who wins in their state, okay, which they can't do, by the way. Constitutionally, they can't do that. But they're going to try and do it anyway. They don't have to send their electors for Trump. They have to recertify for Trump, which I think is fascinating. So then I got to part two. Okay, so part two of my – you can see the big apples. You know, I got these big red apples with the blue background on my Facebook page. That's where you'll find these particular Facebook tweets. So part two of this great adventure is then Congress will have to correct their January 6th elector count. That ends the Biden insurrection, okay? So the states, a certain amount of states they do an election audit. They do a forensic audit. They find that there was cheating. Oh, big surprise, right? We know there's cheating. But they certify it. They certify that there was cheating. They make it official, right? Just as official as they made their Biden vote count, which was fraudulent. So you can't certify a fraud, okay? So you have to correct that. And the way that they correct it is they certify Trump electors and say, well, we goofed. We have now proven through our forensic audit that Trump won. Here is the correct electoral count. That then goes to Congress. Okay. well, Congress, you know, had the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, which they used as an excuse to stop the challenge that was being done before the installation of Joe Biden January 20th. Okay, that's when this could have been fixed, but they didn't. They used the insurrection and they stopped the challenge process. So that's a failing of Congress. They also, apparently there was a day, November 23rd also. I've heard that Mike Pence could have sent the fraud electors back and said, no, that's wrong. You know, or that when the state legislator said, you know, we sent this in, but we goofed. You know, we need these back. Mike Pence could have done something, but he didn't, because Mike Pence wanted Joe Biden to be president and he wanted to be the deep state. You know, kiss the ring of the deep state, you know, pledge his obedience and do his bidding to get Trump out of office. So thanks, Mike Pence. You know, you're a total screw up and you're never going to go anywhere in politics ever again, except maybe as a Democrat. All right. So that's the next part. Part two, Congress will have to correct their January 6th electoral count. All right. Now, there's no guarantee Congress is going to want to do this. First of all, the House isn't going to do that. Because they are they're Democrats, you know, even though they're fraudulently elected. So here's the irony. The Democrats are, I'm sure there's a great amount of fraudulent Democrats in the House right now, all right, that with the election correction in certain states, they're also going to correct their congressional races as well and put Republicans in for Democrats, and the House will probably go Republican, okay? If that happens, then everything changes, but, you know, until the recertification, you know, Democrats aren't going to want to let that happen, all right? So part three, if Congress fails, then the Supreme Court will have to make them. And then it said, if the Supreme Court fails, then we have to make them. Okay, so here's the part. So we get another January 6th. The electoral count is, you know, vastly in favor of Trump. It's above 270. Certain states have corrected their electoral count. They now state that these are Trump electors. Trump, you know, wins the 2020 election after it's corrected for the fraud. Okay, so then Congress, you know, they get a new series of ballots. They get together, they open them up and go, oh, gee, you know, Trump really did win. Okay, well, it's time for a peaceful, this is going to get really fun, right? A peaceful transfer of power between, you know, Joe Biden and lawful President Trump. So this is where it gets really interesting. And then we say to the Democrats, excuse me, your assumed regime, you know, person, your illegal office holder needs to go. And let's see if you guys are going to do a peaceful transfer of power. Well, of course they're not. They're going to ride in the streets and scream and yell and, you know, say, this is all, your fraud is a fraud. Or they're going to say their fraud is correct and and we are the fraud. So they're going to project it onto us. So Congress, I believe, will fail in this duty because there are too many Democrats that are there fraudulently and there are too many gutless Republicans that let it happen. So they're going to say, we can't have another January 6th. We can't have another armed insurrection, even though nobody was armed and it wasn't an insurrection. Okay. We can't do that. All right. So this is where I think Congress is going to fail. All right. So then it goes to the Supreme Court. Okay. Now the Supreme Court did the right thing in 2000, you know, declaring for Bush. So the Supreme Court has the power to do that. I still have to find it in the Constitution. The person to ask is Jonathan Mosley, Jonathan, who does our legal report on Thursdays, and I'll talk to him about that. But I want to go over 2020 and see what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. The Supreme Court then should take up the Texas case against the other states, should take up all the cases they're not taking. Because, you know, if the electoral count is vastly in favor of full President Trump, Biden is the loser. We know Biden can't be in the White House any longer, yet he's still there. Everything he does is now moot. Everything he did is now moot. Every decision, election, you know, executive order, every action, every pronouncement, every even saying that you can't say, you know, China virus or Wuhan flu, you know, all that stuff, everything he did is gone. You know, it should be gone anyway. But, you know, once the electoral count changes, he can't be there. Now, is he going to leave? Don't know. Okay. Is Congress going to force him to? They should. But are they going to? Probably not. Now, which brings us to the Supreme Court, which has also failed to do their job. Okay. I think I have a little more faith because I envision, you know, a million Trump supporters gathering around the Supreme Court going, well, you know, when are you going to get your butts in gear and do something? So that's when I think it's going to be very interesting. So Congress, now if Congress actually does the right thing, but here's the thing, who's going to open up those ballots? You know, those new electoral counts, you know, in the Congress, Kamala Harris is, you know, as acting fraudulent VP. All right. So she's going to be the one that opens, and she can say, well, I don't see any votes here for Trump. I just see Biden votes. She can just openly lie. And who's going to challenge her? Well, we can't pick on a woman now. You know, so Congress is, you know, that could be their excuse. If Kamala Harris opens up the ballots, you know, from the states saying we certify Donald Trump, and she says, well, I don't see anything here. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, if she just lies like a Democrat, you know, then that's why it's going to have to go to the Supreme Court. I believe ultimately this goes to the Supreme Court. And then we'll see if they, you know, and they don't want to take this on. And Jonathan can confirm this. They don't want to take this on because they don't want a replay of 2000. But I'm sorry, folks, it goes with the territory. You're stuck with it. You're going to have something far worse than a replay of 2000. And it's even worse for them because they already look like cowards. They're already viewed horribly by Trump supporters who know that they wimped out, that they could have avoided everything we're going through now. They could have avoided the millions of people, all the people that are going to be killed or injured or hurt or at the very least have their vote stolen, their tax money stolen, and all the things that are happening by illegal aliens didn't have to happen if the Supreme Court did their job, you know, before the inauguration or installation. But they didn't. Okay. So anyway, that's part three. Part four of this little scenario is that you know, so let me get you part three again so you'll get the connection. Part three, if Congress fails, then the Supreme Court will have to make them. In other words, make them recertify. If the Supreme Court fails, then we have to make them. All right. Part four, then we have to check every congressional 2020 election to see who actually should be there. So the other thing is, if we check, you know, if the forensic audits also determine that a whole bunch of current Democrats in Congress, you know, are there by fraud, they have to go and then they certify, you know, the Republican members of Congress. Well, then the House flips. Okay, when the House flips and the Senate majority goes to, I don't know, let's say 68 to, 42 or whatever it would be, you know, Republican senators to Democrat, that'd be a huge, well, that's a big change. Let's say 58 to 42, that would make more sense. This is 90s, yeah, 58 to 42. So now you've got a definite majority of Republican senators. It only takes 60 votes to close off debate. Okay. Oh, which reminds me, those right, you know, they're trying. We could probably talk about this tomorrow. They're going to try and get the second part of the $2 trillion bills from hell. You know, the first $2 trillion bill from hell was the stimulus. All right. They called it a reconciliation bill, so they didn't have to have any Republican votes have it pass. It wasn't going to be up for a filibuster. Well, that was wrong. And the parliamentarian, Ms. McDonough, should have said so, but she didn't. Okay. So she screwed up. The second time this comes through, this infrastructure bill, they're going to call that a reconciliation bill, even though it's not, and try and get it through without Republican votes. Republicans could object to that. They actually could. They could say, hey, this is not a reconciliation bill. You know, this is subject to a filibuster. We're instituting a filibuster. It takes 60 votes to stop debate. That's what they should do if they had any balls. But we got a bunch of castrato eunuchs in the Republican Party, and that's the problem. So part four of my little scenario, then we have to check every congressional 2020 election to see if who should actually be there. And what we really have to do is check the 2018 vote to see if, in fact, you know, all the things the House did in terms of impeachment were even legal. Last part of this before I get to Josie, who's on the line now. The greatest tool for voter registration integrity, and this is a little different subject, all right, is to have the registrations expire December 31st and everyone re-registers after January 1st. So if you want to get clean voter rolls, you have them expire every year and everybody re-registers. Oh, but that's a burden. Black people can't find their way to election, you know, places. Oh, give me a break. That's a bunch of nonsense and you know it. All right. So anyway, so my last little tweet here, scientific proof shows how the 2010 census was critical for voting machine fraud, which means the 2020 census needs a redo. Okay, so we need to redo the 2020 census so they can't use it for vote fraud. We need to have voter registrations expire December 31st, and we need Josie's bill to have fingerprint ID at the polls every time we vote. On that note, let me bring on Josie and see. So what do you think of my little scenario here for getting Trump back in office? How's that sound?
Oh, we already know he's going to be back probably before August. He'll be back taking charge of the country. Mm-hmm. And
I don't want to take in charge of the country. I want him just as president. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, running the country as a president. He's been our president all alone. We all know it. That's why the conservative, we haven't been violent. We've been patiently waiting. And the reason they want to check all the states that cheated. It's because we want to arrest them all. It's like if you went to an Olympic and you notice that that person cheated with one little thing, they cancel or they boycott that person immediately. But in this case, finding the cheating in one state, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
We want them all because we want them all arrested, bottom line.
Well, I want enough people arrested that there's a real deterrent for ever doing this again. It's more important to get Trump back in office, as I argued with Dr. Pry. It's more important to get him back to prove that crime doesn't pay, that election fraud doesn't pay. We can't let this happen, regardless of what you think of Trump. Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Now, do you see him coming back the way I see him coming back, or do you see him coming back a different way?
We've been told that he's not coming back to the White House. I don't know yet. I'm not sure about that. So it's going to be a little bit different, including our money. So it's been taking, it's taken a little while to organize it all. And I personally going to see Mike Flynn for Memorial Weekend. And I personally going to give him I want to give him two bills that we have wrote. So prepare one that you want, and I'm going to give him my bill for voting ID fingerprint.
Okay.
So I don't want to overwhelm him with too many, so give me one more, and I'm going to hand them two personally to him on that day, on a Friday.
Well, I'll email them to you, and you can print them out. I make email versions. I make printable versions of the bills by taking a lot of the stuff out and just leaving the essence of the bill there. So people, it's like a fact sheet. So yeah, I can make that up. Sure.
Yes.
Just remind me of when. When's this going to be?
I'm going to be in Texas with Mike Flynn, Cindy Powell, many speakers. We don't know if Trump is going to surprise us or not yet. We don't know about that.
When's this going to be?
May the 28th, I'll be in Dallas with all of them having dinner.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing I need to be going to. So this is why all you folks out there, if you want to sponsor Action Radio, you know, companies, you know, Heritage Foundation, as we talked about earlier. This is the kind of thing I need so that I can be there, because I need to be there.
But I'll be representing you, okay?
Oh, that's fine.
I'll talk
got no problem with that
Action
whatsoever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the main thing with us conservatives, like I said before, we know what's coming. We know more than 500,000 people will be arrested, and that's what we've been told. So
that's
I
a lot of people. Half a
it
million?
It is. I know.
See, I don't think it's that big. You know, and the people that I really want arrested,
but
the people I want arrested are Obama, you know, Hillary Clinton. The people that did the algorithms, the behind-the-scenes nerds that ran the machines, the things that Mike Lindell talked about, the people that dragged the ballots out from under the desk, the folks that blocked the observers, I don't think it's that big. I think it's maybe a few hundred people. I don't think it's half a million. That seems
surprised.
To me. And fines might be better than jail for a lot of those folks. I don't see incarcerating half a million people.
What Trump is trying to do, that's why he's being patient with all of this, and he said he's going to come in a different form. He said it to us. What Trump is trying to do is arrest all the child trafficking, all involved in all this fraud in this country with money laundering, with drugs, with everything, including, I believe, George Bush is going to be arrested also because of the 9/11 towers in New York City that he's behind this also. So many.
Yeah, that's a whole different issue.
Fraud election.
Yeah.
So anyway, so many, many people will be arrested. That's all I can tell you. Lots.
Okay.
So we want them all. We want them all, not just a few. Because if Donald Trump would have come and said, hey, you stole my election, I'm going to cry about it, and just make a big thing, there would have been riots. There would have been all kinds of malicious things in the streets, and you name it, it is, you know, it would have got ugly. And that's why they're doing it like this. And I was told that that he'll be back. He's going to have a big event, the 4th of July, in Mount Rush, July the 4th, He's going to reveal a big thing, and we're going to be there. So hopefully it happens. I don't know yet. They're planning.
But your bills
are awesome, and don't allow anyone to tell you that you're not doing a good job. You're doing a good job with it.
Well, thank you.
When we get the right people in office, some of your bills, maybe not all, but some of your bills will stick because we're going to have the right people that care for America like you do and I do.
Thank you.
And they do work, and I was kind of upset, but I didn't want to call because I don't want to talk to Peter.
Oh, that's okay.
Yet,
no, and I appreciate Dr. Pry's input. I just completely disagree with him.
That's all.
You know, because people are screaming against they don't like the fact that vaccine manufacturers have no product liability. And they've been screaming about that for years. So I come along and write a bill that they can take directly to Congress and fix it. Okay. Same thing with the Communications Decency Act. People have been screaming for a few years now. The big tech is censoring them. They're being deplatformed. What can we do? Oh, woe is me. I said, well, here's what you do. I've rewritten Section 230 so they can't do that anymore. Get this bill to Congress. You know, people are dying by the hundreds of thousands because no access to hydroxychloroquine, no access to ivermectin, no good information on zinc and on vitamin D. So I changed the FDA procedure. I said, here's the bill that changes the FDA and breaks their monopoly power. This needs to go to Congress. So when Congress says, well, we're doing the best we can, and citizens say, no, you're not, this is better. You know, and then they show them a bill that we've written. Okay, so that's where I see the impact happening. So the protests are good, the direct actions are good, you know, all the things. I don't believe in violence. I think Dr. Pry is much more into really strong solutions than I am. But I think this is stronger. I still think the pen is mightier than the sword. Did you hear his example? That was pretty dramatic.
I was listening halfway asleep, but I was listening.
It's pretty hour. Yeah, and that's fine. Listen, I appreciate the bluntness and drama that he brought to the argument. I just disagree. Let me spend. I got about 13 minutes left. I want to talk about something that
Wait. But the beauty of this is we're in a freedom of speech, so it's okay for him to say whatever he wants
and
whatever we want. You know.
Yeah.
And that's
this isn't a liberal
what
show.
We're all about in America. Wait, I wanted to tell you something. What's really bothering me right now, and I am going to call today Ron DeSantis' office. I hope I can get through.
Mm-hmm.
What's really bothering me in our state of Florida is that the mask, supposedly, you don't have to wear them if you don't want to by law. But all these corporates are forcing you. Like, I was in a big argument with a CVS here. So corporates like CVS and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all this corporate, which they all are corporate, they're demanding that we wear the mask. And I disagree. And I'm going to call him today. I hope, I can get through it. Because if you're going to be with your corporate in our red state, you better get the heck out of here. Because you're not following our demands, no mask, you know. So I kind of got upset yesterday with a lady in a CVS. She will not sell me a product that I was buying because I didn't have the mask. And she handed me a mask. I said, no, thank you. I got my own. So I had to put my mask in order for her to sell me what I was buying yesterday, and that really bothered me.
The problem is, like I said earlier, the first corporation that comes forward and says masks are a joke, we're not going to have our employees mandate to wear them anymore, they're going to get so much business that, you know, they're going to be leading, and they're going to start to bring this down. But corporations, you know, that they're going by false information. They're going by leftism. They believe it's like Coke and Delta. In Georgia, believe that there's a voter suppression law. It's a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
So they don't know. They're getting false information. So
and you know, Greg, we're not in a blue state. I can see those corporations in Michigan or Wisconsin or whatever they had, blue state. It's fine, but not here. You're here in Florida, and you need to respect what we want in here in Florida.
Yep.
If our governor says you by law you don't have to wear the mask, they should abide that law. So they're breaking our laws here by being in here. So I'm going to I'm going to complain today about that.
Well, and the civil rights.
I'm very disappointed.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree with you. Let me know what happens. But the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission said that employers do have the right to require masks, and that's wrong. That's a wrong decision. It goes against the HIPAA laws, where you can say, well, you can say, I have a medical condition, I'm not going to wear a mask, and they can't ask you what your condition is. So, and it goes against your constitutional right. A face mask is a seizure. It is a seizure of your person protected under the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable seizures. It's an unreasonable seizure, A, because masks
don't work.
And B, because they have no right to require you wear a medical device, which is what a mask is. So for many reasons.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, Greg.
Yeah.
But you know
what?
They don't care. They say they don't care. And I was a,
I was a Thai pizza, and they don't require a mask. I got
to
hold you up on this. I got to get to this article, and I want to put it on this podcast so people have this. I want to get back to the election because – and you're welcome to listen in. But the beauty of what happened in 2000 is the lesson for the Supreme Court today, and I have to get this in. So let me start this. And you're welcome to comment as we go through. I'll see how much of this I can get through. But this is from November 4th, 2020, how the 2000 election came down to a Supreme Court decision, because this might very well happen again. This may happen in 2021. So the article says, and this is from the History Channel, which is kind of interesting. And it says 537 votes. All right. That's all that separated Democrat Al Gore and his Republican challenger, George Bush. When on November 26, 2000, 3 weeks after Election Day, the state of Florida declared Bush the winner of its 25 electoral votes in the race for U.S. president. It says, after a wild election night on November 7th, 2000, during which TV networks first called the key state of Florida for Gore, then for Bush, followed by a concession by Gore that was soon rescinded, the results for who would be the nation's 43rd president were simply too close to call. In the 36 days that followed, Americans learned Gore had won the popular vote by 543,895 votes. Of course, that's irrelevant, right? But it's in the Electoral College that counts. All right. As accusations of fraud and voter suppression, sounds familiar, calls for recounts and the filing of lawsuits ensued, the terms hanging chads, dimpled chads, and pregnant chads became part of the lexicon. I can explain those another time. That sounds really important. I'm going to skip through this and get to the Supreme Court part here. So anyway, this is there was a book by Andrew E. Bush, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. He says, when the lead shrank to about 2,000 votes in the early hours of the morning, TV reversed again, rescinded the call for Bush, and declared Florida as yet undetermined. The initial problem was failure of the exit polls, for which they later overcompensated. Yeah, well, we'll see. Anyway, the result of the 2000 presidential election ended in such a close call wasn't a huge surprise. He says, according to the Perfect Tie, the Gallup tracking poll showed 9 lead changes during the fall campaign, with Bush holding a slight lead in the final week of the campaign and Gore gaining a swing in the momentum on election day. Well, yeah, we'll see how much shooting is going on there. So that's the book. That's the book by this guy, Andrew E. Bush. All right. So anyway, let me skip around a little bit. I got about 6 minutes left. I want to get to the key part. Anyway, as it became clear, the final vote in Florida, which would decide the election, because everything else, yeah, so this is it. Well, the way Florida goes, whichever way Florida went, would have decided the 2000 election for Bush or Gore. They said it was basically a tie. Gore rescinded his concession during a phone call. This is according to the New York Times. Bush asked, you mean to tell me, Mr. Vice President, which Al Gore was, Clinton administration, you're retracting your concession? That was followed by Gore's response, you don't have to be snippy about it, and let me explain something. Your younger brother is not the ultimate authority on this. Okay, so Gore was referring to the fact that Florida's governor at the time was Jeb Bush, George Bush's younger brother, further fueling the fire. So Catherine Harris, Florida's Secretary of State, charged with overseeing an impartial election, was a Republican who served as co-chair of Florida's Bush for President Election Committee. So in this case, instead of the Democrat Secretaries of State rigging the election for Bush, they were saying that Catherine Harris was rigging it for Bush in this case. Secretaries of State, they say, are rigging it for Biden, which I believe they're doing. And they were saying that at the time that Catherine Harris was rigging it for Bush back in 2000. The quote is here, when an election is this close and closely fought, a recount along these timelines is to be expected. And that's Rick Hasen, professor of law and political science, University of California. All right, he wrote a bunch of books, too. He says, the Minnesota Senate race in 2008 took almost 9 months to fully resolve. But for a presidential election, we need finality much sooner, making everything more difficult. So this is it. They say, well, you got to get this done. But, you know, but there isn't really a timeline. You know, obviously we have a fraud in now. So that part of what he said has changed. All right. I want to get to just we got about 4 minutes. I want to get the most important stuff here. Let me skip down a little bit. So anyway, here's what happened. So there were charges and countercharges, and things went back and forth, and you know, all this legal maneuvering. And let me see. Let me pick it up here. Over the next few weeks, this is after the election in November in 2000. No winner yet determined. Officials conducted an electronic recount in which ballots were refed into the same machines, but Gore asked for a hand recount. He says there was much squabbling about when, how, and whether to do such hand recounts. This is before voting machines, I think, were really widely used. Anyway, according to the Voting Wars, one law firm alone eventually handled 40 election-related lawsuits for the Florida Secretary of State. So this is a mess. Ballots themselves became an issue of contention. Let me see if I can skip down a little bit more here. After lawsuits, challenges, and recounts. Oh, here's where it gets good. All right. So after lawsuits, challenges, and recounts, the Florida Supreme Court ordered a recount of undervotes in all of Florida's 67 counties, which was quickly appealed by Bush, and the case headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. So that's what happened. So the Florida Supreme Court steps in, says, okay, you know, we're gonna order a recount. And we know what happens in recounts. So that's when Democrats, you know, put in the fraud votes, and that's how they win. Okay. That's been the pattern so far. All right. So they say this, so that's why it was appealed by Bush. You know, he's not stupid. He doesn't want to lose, you know, for that reason. All right. And so he says, recount votes. And yeah, you know, Bush, okay. So heads to the U.S. Supreme Court. So here we go. And this is according to Bush, B-U-S-C-H, who's the professor I mentioned earlier. The Supreme Court had telegraphed its displeasure with how things were going in Florida a week or so before by sending the first Bush plea to the court back to the Florida Supreme Court by a 9-0 vote. 9-0 vote, okay? And the quote is saying basically, we'd rather not get involved, but you are messing this up. Fix it. So the federal Supreme Court ordered the Florida Supreme Court to stop messing around with all these extra recounts, solve it, declare a winner, let's move on. So the Florida Supreme Court ignored the warning and pressed forward with its call for a recount, and the case was returned to the U.S. Supreme Court. So the case, according to Hasten's book, you know, this person we mentioned earlier, put the Florida election under a microscope, examining election machines, voter lists, vote counting rules, the state's poorly drafted election statutes, partisan election officials, and the role of the courts. That's pretty much where we are now. So there's a lot of parallels between 2000 and now, which is why I want to talk to this with Jonathan, you know, when we get him on Thursday. So the quote is here. This is Hasten again, one of the professors. At that point, there were actually two key votes. The first was a 7-2 determination that the Florida recount, as it was being conducted, was unconstitutional on the grounds that there were no clear standards that were being applied consistently to all ballots. That's the hanging chad, all that kind of stuff, right? Then by a 5-4 vote, the court declared that time had run out to devise a remedy that stopped the process with Bush ahead. Okay, so you get this? This is key to understanding the whole thing, all right? So there were two votes. First of all, there was the three votes, 9-0 vote saying Florida, whoop, there's my 92nd warning. So the first vote was 9-0. Florida solved this. We in the Supreme Court really shouldn't have to do something about it. But if you don't, we're going to step in. All right. So that's what they said. And then Florida wants to do a recount of the undervotes. I'm not sure what those are. We can find that anyway. But they wanted to sort of massage the count. I think the Florida Supreme Court was Democrat at that point. All right. I'll check with Jonathan. So they wanted to keep the recounts going. They basically wanted to recount until Bush won. This is what they do. You know, each time they recount, recount until Gore won. So Gore would move up a little bit, then move up a little bit more, a little bit closer. And Bush is still ahead. And the Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court said to the Florida Supreme Court, you can't keep doing this. You're making up new rules. What you're doing is unconstitutional. There are no standards here. All right. You're doing this. You've decided Gore is going to win and you're going to keep recounting until he does. And the Supreme Court said, we're stopping the process. It's done. Bush is ahead. He wins. That's how they did it. All right. So it says the decision resulted in one of the most controversial Supreme Court decisions in American history, with the Florida win Bush led Gore in electoral votes nationally 271-266, and out of legal options, Gore conceded. The court divided along ideological lines, with the conservatives backing Bush, the more conservative candidate, and the liberals backing Gore, the more liberal candidate. The case presented difficult questions about the court intervention in a process that both sides thought was infected with politics from the opposite side. Basically, I think that's what's going to happen again. So if I can sum that up in 5 seconds, since I'm actually off the clock now, Congress is going to fail when the states give them the proper electoral count. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's going to have to declare that Trump actually did win based on the new electoral count. Election solved. Trump goes back into office. That's how I think it's going to happen. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 in the morning Central Time. We will continue this.